Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Braden Gall, Derek Mason, Munson producing behind the glass. D-Mace, good morning, sir. Good Thursday to you. The Titans have a new kicker. We got an injury report with some positive news on it. Mm-hmm. We got National Signing Day in the books. We got the Preds back on the ice. Got a lot of stuff to do today, my man. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. We got a lot of good stuff. You know, it's just the world of sports. Ending the 2019 calendar year.
You getting reminiscent on me over there?
No, not yet.
Not until after Christmas?
If the Titans win both of their games, then we can start to reminisce on, you know, how hard they had to fight back and then put themselves in a position to make the playoffs. No nostalgia tonight. Well, this morning.
No self-reflection.
Exactly.
On the year of accomplishment.
Absolutely. So
as you enter empty nest status here in a few months.
Yeah, that's why
2019, you know, the last full year of having a child in high school.
Exactly.
Big deal.
I was messing with my son the other day when he got the news that he got it accepted into Boston University.
Congratulations again, by the way.
Yes.
It's very much a humble brag of you, by the way.
Yeah.
And my son's going to Boston.
He's smarter than me, I tell you that. If I tried it over again, I still couldn't get into Boston University.
Although they might let you in to study all of your maladies.
Exactly.
Like study your shoulders and your knees and your head. Actually, Derek, you can come in.
Yeah, you're accepted, but you're going to go to the
we need somebody for
the
lab.
Scientific wing. But I said, dude, this is what we can do. I said, we should have a academic signing day. I said, instead of hats, you get sweaters. You put your sweaters
vest,
out.
Yeah,
you put
vest.
your sweaters out on the table. And you got all your sweaters.
Does it have a matching scarf, too?
And I'm taking my academic talents to Boston University.
Yeah. And then you just, like, get the sweater and you just wrap it around your neck. Oh, yeah, you go all Carlton Banks, man. You got to go Carlton Banks on you, right?
Like, yes, I think every kid should have that, man. Every kid should experience
you
that.
See, so it's interesting you mentioned that, because I watched, obviously, entirely too much of National Signing Day coverage yesterday.
They've gotten so creative.
Yeah, but you know what, though? Like, almost all of them said, I'm taking my academic and athletic talents to so-and-so. Now, I still do not understand today why people think I'm taking my talents and copying LeBron from, like, the Boys and Girls Club is, like, still a funny or creative or cool thing to do. I don't get it.
It's not.
I cringe every time I see it for no reason at all. It doesn't actually affect my life. But they almost everybody yesterday added, like, it was very interesting. And, again, I don't know if there's, like, some giant plan amongst all the top recruits or whatever. But almost everybody at their press conference said, you know, Jordan Birch, the number five player in the nation, is going to South Carolina yesterday. And he's like, I'm taking my academic and athletic talents to University of South Carolina. Everybody did. You know, the Flo kid, the linebacker out of California who goes to Oregon, a top 10 player. He's like, I'm taking my – everybody said there wasn't any shenanigans at the press conferences. There hasn't really been in years.
Yeah.
Tennessee had a huge day yesterday, so we'll get to that. But it was interesting. Maybe I'm making a mountain out of a molehill here, but it was interesting that almost everybody added academic. And as someone who's covered recruiting since the first second I got into this business at Rivals.com in 2005, that was never a consideration. And almost everybody was including academics yesterday in their – and I'm like, you know what? Maybe parents are getting to these kids and doing the right thing and telling them, hey, just be cool about it. No shenanigans.
Yeah.
And now they're adding academic. An observation.
I think a lot of it has to do with these universities because they get – you know, based on how many students you graduate and all this other stuff, you get funds based upon that, or you get funds taken away, scholarships taken away, whatever the case may be. I think these universities are stressing that these kids graduate, and these kids are learning now. This generation is learning now that, we're not all going to make it to the professional level. I think they realize that we're not all going to make it to the professional.
So?
I think they are. I think they've seen so many. I think these kids, for the most part, I think these kids have seen so many stories, or their parents have seen so many stories where, you know, kid, you know, five-star recruit, whether it be boy or girl, they get in college, and whether it be for because of an injury or situation, or they're just not good enough, they can't make it to the next level. I think there have been enough stories out there in regards to that. I don't think, you know, in the early 90s, early 2000s, 1980, they really didn't care much about academics. I don't think the institutions care whether the athletes graduated or not.
Yeah, I mean, there's still plenty of institutions that just want to funnel you through the system.
Exactly.
I get that. I don't know if it actually is tied directly to anything specifically. I do think that young people are understanding more and more, and I think, you know, guys like you who played during a certain era who are now telling them, guys, hey, even if you play for 10 years in the NFL, you're going to have like 50 or 60 more years to live life. Like, you're going to have another life, whether you make it or not in the NFL. And I think that's maybe something that people are learning more at a younger age, is that life beyond football is going to happen for you, whether it happens when you're 22, 27, or 31, or 35, and you're really lucky and you play for 12 years or whatever. Like, it doesn't matter. 31 to be retired from the NFL, you still got like 60 more years potentially if you're lucky.
You got a whole lifetime, lives.
I think that is something that people are understanding. There's young people in particular, you know, they understand, I think, that how football is only going to take me X to X, and then there's going to be a whole life after X that I need to deal with. And I do think, my observation of yesterday could mean absolutely nothing. I just thought it was interesting, as someone who's studied signing day very, very closely for a long time, I've never heard across the board kids from every region of the country making sure they mention academics. You know, Emmett Smith, we're gonna hear from Emmett Smith a little bit later on this first hour, but Emmett Smith, I thought, gave a great speech as a Barry Sanders guy. It pains me to say, Emmett Smith was phenomenal yesterday with his son, who decided to go to Stanford. And Barry Sanders' son, I'm a Barry guy, his son went to Stanford. Like, if your kid can go to Stanford on a full ride, like,
take it.
Like, you celebrate. And I thought Emmett Smith was great yesterday. So, I think the shenanigans have died down. I think there was a tipping point, you know, maybe 5, 8, 6 years ago. We're not hearing stories about, you know, a mom running away with the letter of intent, like Alex Collins' mom driving around South Florida with a letter of intent without letting Alex Collins sign it because she didn't want him to go to Arkansas.
Yeah, there was an Alabama player, and I'm blanking on the name, but his mom gave him like a death stare after.
Landon Collins.
Yeah, it was Landon Collins. And his mom was like,
mom was like, oh my God. That was on national TV. Floyd Raven, if you'll remember the very famous Floyd Raven, I think one of the two, his mom forged the letter of intent to either Mississippi State or Texas A&M, and he wanted to go to the other school. So he signed his letter of intent and sent it into one school, and then his mom forged his signature and sent it into another school. Like, that stuff's gone. We're not seeing that stuff anymore on National Signing Day, which I think is great. I think it's good that we did that. We'll get into the Tennessee Vols class in the SEC. Really big day for a few teams in the SEC, in particular Tennessee yesterday. So we'll dive into that in a few minutes. And then, again, I think everyone needs to hear Emmett Smith's words. Not just recruiting parents and sports parents, but all parents need to hear what he had to say. So we're going to play that for you guys coming up a little bit later on. Coffee with the Coach. Preds back on the ice tonight against the Ottawa Senators, the third of their 4-game road trip. Ottawa is not playing great hockey. They are near the bottom of the standings. This is not a great team, but it's an opportunity. A couple of guys who used to play for that team have a chance to get back up there and play against those guys, namely Kyle Turris. But also, a game against Boston looming on Saturday that is a really, really tough game against arguably the best team in the NHL. So can you collect points today, tonight? And then it sort of makes what happens against Boston irrelevant, because if you pick up 6 out of 8 on the road trip,
that's great.
You have to consider that a successful road trip.
So
the Ottawa game tonight, as the Preds are back on the ice, of course, you can hear every minute of it right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ryan Succop yesterday, right as we were going off the air, Ryan Succop placed on IR, Titans kicker, and Greg Joseph brought in, and he had a chance to talk to everybody yesterday and kind of meet with everybody. And I don't know about your thoughts on, you know, we didn't really have time to expound yesterday, Derek, and bloviate, gas baggery. We didn't really have time to do that about this situation, but we've talked a lot about special teams, and the Titans make a huge change yesterday right at the end of the show.
Yeah, they did. I mean, kickers, typically you don't, you know, get a headline story about kickers in the city unless they, you know, miss a game-winning field goal or they make a game-winning field goal. In this situation, this has been sort of the the story that has been bubbling for quite some time since Suck Up has come back. You know, should they have went and got another kicker? Did they take him off? Did they rush him back? Is he fully healthy? You know, why did they make the move to bring in a specialist to do kickoffs instead of a PAT guy? So this has been an underlying story for quite some time, but it hasn't gotten to where, you know, last two games of the season, they are must wins. Now, if Titans was in a position right now, they were, you know, 10 wins, then I don't think at this position, at this point, I don't think the kicker would matter much to anybody.
So you don't think the record dictated what they were going to do?
I think so, because they're at a point right now that these two games, man, they gotta check every box, they gotta cross every T, dot every I. They can't say, well, you know, at the end of the year, if they miss the playoffs, well, man, we should have, you know, changed the kicker, because the kicker might be the reason why they lose the game. We don't know, but they want to cover all their bases. You know, so if indeed they don't make the playoffs, they can say, well, at least we tried.
Here's what the new Titans kicker's voice sounds like and his thoughts on coming into a new locker room.
I don't wish ill on any kicker ever. But, yeah, I mean, you have to be, it's part of my job to be aware of what's going on and all that fun stuff. So, I was just staying ready, doing my part. I'm just here to be me. You know, I'm coming in here. I'm an outgoing guy. Introduce myself, learning everything I can so far from, you know, Bo and Brett. And, yeah, I'm not here to, you know, assert my dominance or anything. I'm just here to be Greg Joseph.
Not here to assert my dominance. That's great line.
Assert his dominance.
But he's an outgoing guy, man. He's just, you know, he fits in with Bo.
I never saw a kicker
assert his dominance.
Assert his dominance on anything.
We know what he meant.
Hey, Jarrell Casey, get my bags. Punk.
Yikes. That'd be hilarious to watch that, wouldn't it?
Hey, somebody grab my tea.
What I think it is, though, because he says I'm a very outgoing guy, which means he's going to fit in with Brett Kern and Bo Brinkley
very well.
Because those guys are goofy and, like, they have fun. And also, as Floyd says, who coached special teams for 17 years, Floyd Reese will tell you, like, special teams guys are just a little different, man.
Yeah, they're
just
different.
A little different. And so when he says that, he's obviously making fun of himself a little bit too, and it's tongue in cheek. And he's like, no, I'm not going to assert my dominance. like that's a thing that a kicker could do anyway. So I think it's endearing. I think it's funny, and I think that the idea of him being outgoing or whatever fits in well with Brett Kern, because Brett Kern's got a great personality. And so again, all that really matters, I don't care what you say in front of a microphone or to the fans or to your teammates, just make the field goal.
Yeah,
make the field goal.
Scoot. Boot it and scoop. That's what I'm saying. Boot and scoops. Boot it and then scoot on over to the sideline. That's all you need to do.
I like that. The injury report yesterday for the Tennessee Titans, good news. Some actual good news, and it could not come at a better time. We will explain when we return. Off and running here on a big show Thursday morning, ESPN 102.5 The Game. NFL fans, don't miss Nashville's best NFL pregame shows. Start your morning off with the kickoff from 7 to 9:30 a.m., followed by the NFL pregame show featuring Jared Stillman, Floyd Reese, Chris Sanders, live from George Jones downtown on 2nd Avenue this Sunday from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m., prior to the Titans taking on the New Orleans Saints. The NFL pregame show brought to you by Wholesale Link, powered by RumbleOn.com, Kubota Tractors, Middle Tennessee Kubota Dealers, and Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House. The injury report yesterday, some good news, D-Mace. Some good news. Adoree Jackson, limited participant in practice. Derrick Henry, limited participant in practice. Everybody practicing yesterday with the exception of Adam Humphries. So you had a good day for news. If you're thinking, hey, maybe Adoree Jackson might be ready to go this weekend, there is no guarantee, obviously, with just a limited participation in practice. But man, the idea, just the concept of having Adoree Jackson back on the field with, you know, to put that secondary almost back together, you feel differently about going into a game against Drew Brees and the Saints, as well as, obviously, a rematch with the Texans.
Yeah, from a security standpoint, yeah, you do. But it still worries me that he's limited, which means he can't do the things that we are asking him to do at this point, all the things we're asking him to do at this point. I'm still worried about that, because a guy that has set out, what, 2-3 weeks now. And then his first challenge will be possibly Michael Thomas. And I'm sure DMPs will, you know, double Michael Thomas. But then you got to go against Ted Ginn, who maybe, yeah, I think he might be just, he might be faster than Adoree. And that's saying a lot. So it's encouraging that he is practicing, but I'm still a little bit skeptical on whether he's going to be ready to go. I'm sure it'll be a game time decision.
I think it's fair to be skeptical.
Yeah,
I don't
because
think
it's
wrong
him
that.
Him coming off that two week layoff and then jumping right back in there. I just wonder. Okay, if they activate. If they make Adoree Jackson active for this game, who do they then put down? And then what?
God,
if
that
Adoree,
sounds like an old dog or something.
Yeah, like put him down. like an old horse. Like we got to put him down, bro.
Jermaine Brock has been put down.
And then what if terrible. Adoree goes out in the first quarter? You know, re-injures the ankle in the first quarter.
Yeah.
And now you're down Adoree and possibly another DB because you chose to sit him.
Well, you got an extra space now because you're not carrying two kickers.
Yeah, so you can activate more guys. So I'm just a little leery.
What a novel concept, not carrying a punter, a place kicker, and a kickoff guy.
Yeah.
Novel concept, not using a roster.
You can do that,
those guys.
You know, 20 years ago, but can't do it now. so I want to see what today brings, because today is a heavier day. It's not the heaviest day for players, but today is a heavy day. A lot of red zone is put in, third down is put in, a little bit of red zone. So if he's going to practice, this would be the day I would want him to practice too, kind of pick up his reps, because if he's still limited a lot, then it's just hard for me to trust that he's going to play. Or if he does play, he's going to be effective. Because you need Adoree. It's not like, okay, I can deal with a 80% Adoree Jackson and that's better than 90% of the league. No, he's not that type of corner. I need him 95% to 100%.
Right, right.
You know, so it's encouraging that he is practicing, but I'm sure it's going to be a game-time decision.
It's better than the opposite, which
is you're right.
If he's not practicing, you're going, oh, crap.
No, so, you're right.
So I'm with you. I'm still hesitant. You can't get too excited about it. You have no idea what percentage he's going to be. Like you said, we'll find out a little bit more today. Either way, Derrick Henry, you know, practicing, Adoree Jackson practicing, you know, obviously all the other guys, Corey Davis, you know, et cetera, practicing with the exception of Adam Humphries. So we haven't really talked much about the Adam Humphries loss. I mean, Anthony Firkser has been so good sort of when they need him to be. You know, they can throw the ball to Deion Lewis in the mm-hmm. slot if they need to. So it's not like they've – I do think they've missed him.
Oh, I think they have too.
And so I think maybe that's an undercut. Maybe it's our fault for not talking enough about Adam Humphries, because I think people assumed, well, he was getting paid $9 million a year, $36 million, he hasn't delivered. Well, he was the leading receiver for like the first, you know, 8 to 10 weeks of the season. So I do think it is something that we probably have not talked enough about, is does this offense actually miss its third and five guy, its slot receiver?
Yeah, I think they do. Because anytime you have to have two guys do the job of one guy, then that means he's missed. You know, was he, you know, this game-breaking receiver? No, he wasn't. But he was a guy that you can count on third down. He's made some big catches for the Tennessee Titans, you know, this year. And you would love to have him on the field. You would love to go into the New Orleans Saints game, you know, fully stocked with personnel. So you have your two big guys outside. You have Sharp. You have, you know, Lewis in the backfield. You have the tight ends. And then you have your slot guys. So not to have them. I think they have missed them. Have missed Humphries. But, I mean, it's one of those deals that you don't want to rush him back. Still,
right. Same thing.
You know, he might be honestly, he might be done for the season. It all depends on how this game goes. Because if you don't win this game, and Houston wins, and Pittsburgh wins, then the chances that you make it to the playoffs is slim. Because if Baltimore wins, I just can't. I can't see John Harbaugh then saying, you know what, we got the AFC, you know, we got the AFC locked up. We got home field advantage locked up. Everybody got to come through us, you know. But I'm still going to play Lamar Jackson, Ingram, and all these guys.
Right.
I can't see that happening.
Yeah.
So
I'm with you on that one.
I'm sure they would love to have him for this game.
Yeah, it'd be huge. And I do think that, and this is such a weird way to look at the NFL, but it's not a team that's coming off a huge, nearly perfect performance, you know, versus a team that's coming off a really terrible performance. That's what the Titans are going to face each of the last 2 weeks, right? They played a Texans team that came off probably the worst showing of their entire season, and they were clearly better. And the Saints are coming off one of their best performances of the entire season. I mean, at least Drew Brees, 29 mm-hmm. of 30 is pretty hard to beat. So you have to to believe that there was going to be regression to the mean with the Houston Texans, and there was. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay saying, you know what, just because they played a great game the Saints last week doesn't mean they're going to come in here and do the same thing. This is the NFL. It resets every single Monday. And so the Saints are going to come in here, and as long as the Titans – listen, they've like the history shows they've played very well against top-rated teams with good quarterbacks, mm-hmm. that they might be getting healthier, which is there's a sign of optimism. They're also playing with their backs against the wall. I mean, they've got to win. Now, this game isn't nearly as important as Week 17 against the Texans. We've talked about the tiebreakers. In case you don't know, if both the Steelers and the Titans finish 10-6, the Steelers go. If the Titans and Steelers both finish 9-7, but that win is over the Saints, the Steelers have the tiebreaker. Mm-hmm. If they both finish 9-7, but that win is over the Texans, so you go 1-1, but the win's over the Texans, then the Titans have the tiebreaker. So, in theory, if you are finishing with the same record as the Steelers, the Texans game is far more important as an AFC marker there than the NFC Saints. So, and if they both go 0-2, and the Steelers and Titans finish 8-8, the Titans have the tiebreaker. So, half of the equation goes to the Titans, half of the equation goes to the Steelers. It's a 50-50 proposition at this point. Basically, I think 538's got them at about 58% chance to make the playoffs. So. Every moment is critical. I don't think, you know, we're sort of master of the obvious stuff mm-hmm. at this point, that every game, every series, every drive is critical. And, you know, Ryan Tannehill, Derrick Henry, Adoree Jackson, whoever it is, they're going to need all hands on deck, and their new kicker, Greg Joseph, who apparently is going to not try to assert his dominance on the Tennessee Titans locker room.
Well, he needs to insert it on a football field, which means
just on the football.
Again, which means scoot it and boot it. Booted and scooted.
Just kick the football through the uprights, please. Okay.
Boot it through the uprights and scoot your little cell phone over to the sideline and laugh with your buddies.
On kickoffs. Just get into the end zone.
Yeah.
Okay? Just kick it into the end zone.
That's all you got to do.
Just do your
job is
D-Y-J.
Easy. Your job is easy,
do
buddy.
Do your job. Do you really think it's
says
that?
Says the guy that never kicked a field goal.
Actually.
In a game.
I mean, I definitely, you know, with my buddies have made some like 35 yarders before.
I've never kicked a field goal in a game.
But I grew up playing soccer, so mm-hmm. I had that soccer style, you know, leg swing going. Mm-hmm. You say it's easy. I just am curious. Like, you're running down a football field looking up at a pass, and you're mm-hmm. wide open, and you got to catch that pass. That's an easy thing for a receiver to do, but it's not an easy thing for a human to do. I mm-hmm. think it's the same for, like, I would not want to be Norwood or Adam Vinatieri or whatever. I don't want to be that guy.
Yeah, the average guy or girl couldn't, you know, with 2 seconds left on the clock for the Super Bowl, you kicking a 40-yard field goal. The average Joe or Joette would shank it. They would kick the ball right
into somebody's
hindquarter.
Yeah. Yeah. Into the rumpus.
Exactly.
It's funny, like, all these, because no kicker will ever understand what a middle linebacker can do.
Mm-hmm.
But no middle linebacker really understands what a kicker can do.
Yeah,
you're
right.
If you think about it, like, there's just no way anybody else on that roster could do what the kickers could do, because if you could do it,
you'd be doing
it. Take your $8 million to kick field goals.
Oh, of course.
Because that's a fun job.
But, man, the reason why I think players feel the way they feel about kickers is because, you know, kickers,
they also practice on a different field.
Kickers,
you know,
practice on a different field. Yeah. They're in the locker room playing golf, you know, setting up golf games, you know, while everybody else is out practicing. You know, they're setting up tee times. It's just, you know, frolicking in the in the locker room while everyone else is working hard.
They're just posting stuff on the gram.
Exactly. They're posting stuff on the gram, because if it didn't happen, if you don't post on the gram, it didn't happen.
I learned that yesterday. You guys told me that if it's not on the gram, that it did not, in fact, happen.
Now, kickers do work hard, but they also got a lot of leisure time, too.
I don't know.
So we don't really consider kickers like They are, what would you call?
You still occasionally have to make a tackle in the NFL. Okay. So.
What do you call half of a kid? I don't know. Half of a player? Like, you're in the
half
NFL, but you're not. It's just like
are
that
you a
kicker.
Member of the NFLPA and are you making millions of dollars? Yes.
No, but it's
that's
like
all I care about.
You're part of the NFL, but you don't operate like the NFL, other NFL players
operate.
It's
a unique fraternity.
Yeah, they have a really unique fraternity. Quarterbacks
are in a different fraternity than most NFL players do.
Oh, of course.
Slightly different fraternity, but a fraternity
nonetheless. You can't get in that fraternity. You can't.
I feel like there's
two fraternities you can't get in. Well, three. Offensive line fraternity, quarterback fraternity, and the kicker fraternity.
I feel like there's a lot more hazing in the kicker fraternity than there is in all the other fraternities.
You might be right.
And not by the fraternity. I feel like it's by all the other people in the locker room hazing the kickers.
But yeah, the kickers might be the worst.
Kickers are people too, man.
Kickers might be the worst, man.
Well, we'll see if the move by the Titans pays off. If they make a couple field goals this weekend and beat the Saints, then it's the same thing with the Tannehill discussion, right? Like, why didn't you go to Tannehill earlier is a discussion we've talked about this week that don't do that to yourself, Titans fans. This one I think you can say, because we all had questions about Suckup and camp. We all had questions about Parkey and Santos and Santoso and why'd you bring Suckup back early? Like, even in the moment, it's not the same as Tannehill. In the moment, we had questions about these decisions. And so if he goes out and he goes 4-for-4 or 5-for-5 in two games, we're going to say, why didn't you make this move earlier?
Yeah.
And that, I think, is a fair question. I think that one is very different than why didn't you switch to Tannehill earlier? No one thought Tannehill was supposed to start in week one. Everybody knew there were suck-up injuries from day one. So we'll see what happens. National Signing Day yesterday. How did the Vols do? They had a huge day. We got some stats for your class to understand and the rest of the SEC. Where does it rank in the SEC? We'll take a look at that when we return. Morning Drive, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.
We're really excited about the guys that signed with us today. We have 21 signees. And, you know, this has been a kind of a long road when you think about when we first got here 2 years ago. We started recruiting a lot of these guys 2 years out. We've built a lot of relationships with them. I think it says a lot about the men on our staff, the folks that work in our recruiting department, everybody associated with our program. When you talk about recruiting, it's a team effort, and we have used all the resources here at Tennessee. Everybody's been bought in and done everything that they could to sell this program. Our players, our current players, can't say enough about what they've done and the interaction when these guys come to campus and building relationships.
Jeremy Pruitt, head coach of your Tennessee Volunteers. Morning Drive, Derek Mason, Braden Gall here on a Thursday edition. National Signing Day was yesterday, although technically it is 3 days. It is yesterday, today, and tomorrow. So in theory, there are still a few names that could pop, as they say, in the industry. And then, of course, there's a final National Signing Day that used to be the National Signing Day that will take place the first Wednesday in February, which used to be like a national holiday for us college football nerds. And now it's sort of turned into an afterthought. But there are some names still on the board, and certainly Tennessee has some names still on the board. But by and large, yesterday, guys, the Tennessee, you know, listen, Alabama finishes or will finish with one of the best two or three classes in America. If you look at the team rankings, if according to 24/7 Sports, it's Clemson 1, which will be the best class in school history, Alabama 2, you've got Ohio State at 3, and then you go basically Georgia, LSU, Texas A&M, Auburn, Florida. Just SEC, 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 SEC national rankings. You mix in Oklahoma and Texas in there, Michigan and Penn State, you work your way down, Notre Dame moved up. The team that moved up the most in the top 25, though, yesterday – The two teams that jumped five spots, Florida State went from 26 to 21 with a nice day, but the Tennessee Volunteers had arguably the best day of anybody in the top 25 yesterday in terms of growth. Their class was not a number 1, 2, 3, or 4 class. They started the day at 20th, but they are now 15th. They moved up five spots in the top 25 yesterday with some big commitments. They landed Tyler Barron, the defensive end, out of Knoxville Catholic, the number 3 rated player in their class. That's
a guy they've been grooming
and had to get him. Yes.
For like the last 3 years.
You cannot let guys leave Knoxville, Alcoa, Maryville,
The guy that
whatever.
Played at Ensworth for 2 years.
Yep.
Then he transfers. So this is a guy's dad. I believe his dad is on the staff at UT. If I'm correct,
there was no reason not to have.
Yeah, there's
to get
no
Tyler
reason
Barron.
Not to get that guy.
Lenneth White, Whithead from Athens, Georgia, the inside linebacker who apparently might be playing running back for Tennessee when he gets to campus. That's a top 200 player. He's the fifth-rated player in their class. They landed him. They switched an athlete, sort of all-purpose guy from TCU, Jimmy Holiday out of Mississippi. They snagged him yesterday. He's a three-star kid. Not a huge, huge name. Maven Joseph, the defensive end out of Florida, who's a number 12 player. Morvin Joseph got him out of Florida. Again, a little undersized, but a defensive end there. A couple of things of note for me when I look at this class. Number one, it was a good day yesterday for Jeremy Pruitt. He moved from 20th to 15th, the biggest jump of any team in the top 25. So that's a really nice day for Tennessee fans. But also, to me, two things. He went heavy on line of scrimmage and defense, mm-hmm. five defensive linemen, four offensive linemen. That's 9 of the 21 signings so far. Obviously, there's still meat left on the bone until February. Four linebackers, one of which may play running back or whatever. But that's 13 of your 21 signings that are going to play either on the front seven on defense or along the offensive line. So he went heavy. The other thing that really stood out to me is he got number 1 in the state of Tennessee, number 4 in the state of Tennessee, number 5 in the state of Tennessee, number 8 in the state of Tennessee, number 9 in the state of Tennessee, and number 10 in the state of Tennessee. Mm-hmm. He dominated in state this round, and I think both of those things, line of scrimmage and in state, as Tennessee continues to grow as a talent producing state, I think those two things really important for the Tennessee Volunteers.
Yeah, they and this is what we've been, you know, this is what we wanted to see from Jeremy Pruitt. You know, we knew coming in that, you know, he was taunted as this, you know, recruiting guru, a guy that knows how to recruit, a guy that knows how when he does recruit, you know, take the talent and he's able to get that talent to play at a level that we would, you know, based upon their star, so to speak, they play at. He develops talent. That's what he does. So he went out and he got all these guys. And what he's doing now is he's starting to build recruiting class on top of recruiting class. Last year's recruiting class was pretty good. I think they ended up, 12th, somewhere around. I think Rivals had him at 12 last year, somewhere around there.
It was top 15.
Yeah.
And fifth, to me, the magic number for those out
there.
And
they were like the sixth team in the SEC.
And that's going to be a question, yeah. I think, that people are going to ask is, can you win SEC championships when you're signing the sixth or seventh or eighth best class in the mm-hmm. SEC, even though you're top 15 nationally? And listen,
I think if things bounce right, you can, but at least you keep right. yourself in the conversation.
And what's interesting is teams like Clemson and Oklahoma, they're in that 8 to 12 range uh-huh. nationally. Now, Clemson this year is going to have the best class in school history. They might be number one overall at the end of the day when National Signing Day in February rolls around and this whole thing is ended. You know, Tennessee, the magic number for me has been and always will be in recruiting to win national titles, top 15. You got to average top 15 classes or better. Mm-hmm. Only two teams have made the playoff with an average recruiting class outside of the top 15. And I hate to say this to uh-huh. you. One of them was Washington.
And Michigan State.
And the other one was Michigan State. And they lost by a combined like 65-7 in mm-hmm. the playoffs. So you got to sort of you have to be in that top 15. And Jeremy Pruitt right now is doing that. If he can add one or two more pieces, there's a good chance they finish, you know, 13th, 14th in the country. A top 15 recruiting class nationally is very, very good. It gives you enough pieces to go to battle. Now, does it mean you can beat Florida, Georgia, Alabama in back-to-back weeks because they're all recruiting better than you? You know, you're going to have to overcome those small talent deficiencies in some way, shape, or form, ideally with coaching or maybe hitting on a quarterback. If Harrison Bailey really is the guy for Tennessee, mm-hmm. you got to hit on your quarterback and also recruit at a high level now, which is just another difficult thing you've got to do in college football to win at a high level. Listen, you can compete for SEC East championships. Can you beat Alabama or LSU when they've got everything working and they've got Tua and they've got Joe Burrow? It's going to be hard, but I think you're giving yourself the chance by landing top 15 classes, and yesterday was a big day for Tennessee.
Well, yeah, you do. Out of the 23 recruits, 11 of them were from the state of Tennessee, which means he did exactly what he was supposed to do first. You secure home first. You get the best players out of your state first, and then you can kind of recruit around that and try to get the best players in other states. Because if you can't get the best players in your state, what makes you think you're going to get the best players in other people's state? So he's done an excellent job. And you know, starting with the defensive and the offensive line, I think that's his years at Alabama and it's just his years of recruiting. He understands that it starts and it ends with your line of scrimmage. And UT has been bullied at the line of scrimmage for some years. And what he's starting to do, he did it last year with getting the five or four star tackles.
2 5-star kids, yeah.
From last year, he's building his offensive line. He's building his defensive line. That's the only way he knows that he can compete with Florida, Georgia, Alabama, LSU, Auburn, teams like that. The only way he can compete with them first is to solidify his line of scrimmage, whether it be offensive line and defensive line. And from what we're seeing, he has done – that's what he's doing now.
Yeah.
Now he has to develop the talent, obviously.
Right, right. Long
but
way
he's,
to go.
He's doing that.
Well,
he's giving himself a chance.
You got to have the groceries to make the meal.
Exactly.
And recruiting is the groceries. And so when you get the groceries, you can then go home, and as long as you're a good chef, you can make a killer meal. And that's the analogy Bill Parcells started a long time ago, and it's still the analogy. There are many great teams – like – just because you have great talent in college football doesn't mean you're a great team. But there are no great teams in college football that don't start with great talent.
Of course.
You've got to have the talent. You need a lot of other things. Strength and conditioning coach, facilities, hardworking players. You probably need the ball to bounce your way a few times as well. But you got to start with great athletes. You cannot win championships in college football without great athletes. I don't care. The world is not flat. The climate change is real. Recruiting rankings matter. Okay, it's a thing. And it's you have to be in the top 15 if you want to compete for titles. And Tennessee is there right now, at least 2 years in a row. Now, one gentleman yesterday, I thought, listen, yesterday was about the kids. It was about the athletes and getting to choose where they get to go and having the power. There was one recruiting dads and moms generally are awful. They're just awful in general. They get involved too much. They're too hands-on. They're trying to control everything. One guy totally, totally changed that around for me, and I could not be prouder to hear what he had to say. You will hear that when we return right here on Morning Drive. You're listening to Morning Drive live from the Wholesaling Studio powered by RumbleOn.com. Derek Mason, Braden Gall, and Munson producing. And so recruiting generally, National Signing Day, there hasn't been nearly as much shenanigans over the last few years. It's sort of died down. You know, Isaiah Crowell pulling the puppy out. You know, kids picking a hat and then later that day signing with a different team. I don't think it was Rashawn Evans. I want to say it was Reuben Foster maybe that like signed, announced. No, it was Cyrus Kwanjo who announced he was going to sign with Auburn at his press conference. He had the ceremony, put on the Auburn hat, was going to go to Auburn, and then like later that day signed with Alabama. Like it's just, I don't think we've seen a lot of that lately. And I think in large part, hopefully, parents are becoming more educated and handling the situation better. The kids are becoming more educated, handling the situations better. And I think that's smart. So Emmitt Smith, obviously, is a guy who's been around. He's been around this sport a long time, played at Florida, obviously, leading rusher all time in NFL history. He has a son, EJ Smith, 5'11", 200 pounds, out of Dallas, Texas, a top running back in this class. He's like a top 150 player, one of the top five running backs in all-purpose backs in the country. He's not an elite five-star guy. He's not one of those surefire, one of those type of level players, Trent Richardson, you know, Derrick Henry type of guys. But he's a pretty big-time recruit. Could go anywhere he wanted to go is the point, right? He has a press conference yesterday, and his finalists, of course, are Florida, where his father played, Georgia, Stanford. Any parent would be proud to get their kid a full ride scholarship to Stanford, and a few others. This was what he had to say after his son chose Stanford, not his alma mater, Florida. This was Emmitt Smith's speech after the announcement.
There's great emotion there. And Emmitt, last thing, he obviously did not pick up the hat of your alma mater. I wonder what just the advice that you gave him was throughout this process, knowing the schools that he was choosing between.
You know, I'm going to take this hat. I'm going to wear this hat. But I can wear this hat. He doesn't have to wear this hat. You know, his daddy went here. That doesn't mean that my son has to go there. At the end of the day, my son has his own journey, and it is his journey, not my journey. And for him to do the things that is best for him is what we teach all of our children, to find what is best for you and go make it happen for yourself. And I'm proud of him for standing up and being the man that he is, the man that he will continue to become. And I'm a Gator. He's still a Gator because he's in my family. My wife is a Gator because she's in our family. So we're still family of Gators, but we're supporting not only EJ, we support Skylar, we support Jasmine, we support Reagan and Elijah. All of our children, no matter where they go. We're going to be parents first, then we can fall in with our kids, fall in second.
Two things. Very important people here. It is his journey, not my journey. And number two, we are going to be parents first and fans second. Every single stinking parent and human being on the planet needs to hear that from Emmett Smith.
Yeah, because of weather. Because, you see it. Not just in sports. You see it in, the academia world where, because granddad went there, dad went there, then all of a sudden it's pressure on son to go there, to attend that university, which his grandpa attended, and it's his plaque is in the halls of said dorm, and yada yada yada. This is where granddad, all the stuff.
I think it's bigger than that. I think it's parents think that obviously we as parents think we know what's best for our kids up to a certain point, and then at some point, your job as a parent is to raise them to a place where they can then go make their own decisions, and whether it's beauty pageant moms, right, or dads, or gymnastics with girls, or whatever, you look at Little League's baseball in Georgia. Parents are insane about this stuff. They're just so over the top, and it's not just where do you go to school. It's I want this for your life, and as a parent, it's hard to separate yourself and say, hey, you know what? Maybe it's not. Maybe I don't know. Maybe she needs to decide.
I think you have to, what you do as a parent is that you give them the tools, you give them advice, you help guide them to where they want to go. And look, if they show interest toward, your alma mater or toward what you did professionally, then you kind of, you help steer them in the right direction. If indeed they want to go down that path. But if they choose not to want to go down that path, then as a parent, yes, you are disappointed. There's no parent in America that can say they went to a university and they had some, graduated or had some success at the university or whatever, and then their son or daughter chooses not to go. There's a little bit of disappointment in you. As a parent, period. Not as an athlete. It's just as a parent, period.
I'd only be disappointed if my kids went to Alabama. That's all. if my kids go to Vandy, I'm like, hell yes, go to Vandy.
But there's a sense of like, man, I would have loved – to be able to walk the campus with my son and daughter the way that I walked.
Sharing that moment. Yeah, yeah.
But you don't let it overtake you to a point where you just hold a grudge or you force your kid to do something they don't want to do. Emmett Smith was exactly right, and I just wish and pray that more parents, because we're talking about sports, more parents that have kids that are playing sports, man, boy or girl, if they don't want to go to your university, don't force them. If they don't want to go to the university that you think is ideal for them, don't force them to go. Because what happens is they become resentful. And they're going to get to that university, and they're not going to work as hard.
Or they're just not going to have as much fun.
Exactly. College is meant for two things, parents. If you hadn't realized yet. You go there, and you grow. As a student,
you find yourself,
boy or girl, you grow and you find yourself, and you get an education on the way. Because to me, growing, finding yourself, figuring out who you are is just as important as getting that education. Because if you never find out who you are, you might not get that education because you don't know what's going on. You might end up dropping out because
take full advantage.
Exactly. You don't take full advantage of the opportunity that you have within that campus, whatever school you go to. So what Emmett Smith said was exactly spot on, because I see some of these parents and players, that played and they want their kids to go. Here's this slide. I was the happiest. I'm going to tell you this, and this is just real talk. I was so happy the day my son said, I don't want to play football anymore. I was so happy because every day he went out there, and he was good. He wasn't great. He's not like he was going to earn a scholarship somewhere. But just the mere fact that he decided on his own, Mom, Dad,
it's not for me.
It's not for me. I don't want to play anymore. This is the road that I want to choose over here. This is not what I want to do. I didn't let him know that I was like relieved, but I was so happy because I know what it takes. I know what's involved in it.
Yeah.
And I took a million hits so that he didn't have to take one hit.
But I imagine, like, for his sake, was it hard for him to tell you that? Because in the back of the kid's mind, especially you being a former player, he's like, look, I don't want to disappoint him. So did he have a tough time having to tell you that?
I don't think he had a tough time. I think he stopped playing a year late. Like, I think he wanted to do it prior year.
He wasn't mentally all that. Like, absolutely. He didn't love it the way he realized, and then he was like, at some point, he's like, I got to talk to Mom and Dad about this.
Exactly. I'm going to tell him that I want to play.
But that makes sense.
I think he probably wanted to stop in his 10th grade year.
And I think, you know, you're different. You played in the NFL. A lot of these kids, Emmitt Smith's kid is a four-star running back who could play anywhere in America.
And it's harder for the guys like that.
Right. Like, these guys are, the 1% of the 1% of people growing up. I think you can broaden his message out even larger.
Exactly.
To every parent who's dealing with it. Because, again, you see these parents of, like, 8-year-olds in Texas where they're running their kids into the ground. And hockey, you're not excused from this either.
No.
Look at all the junior stuff that's happening in Canada where these parents are driving their kids, 8-year-old kids, into the ground on how many tournaments they're playing. Baseball parents in Georgia, you know, dance parents, beauty pageant parents, like, you name it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what the activity is. The amount of projection we do as parents onto our children is astonishing. And to hear Emmitt Smith, a guy who loves his school as much as anybody ever will, who was a Florida Gator through and through, I just thought it was a great moment to see a guy use the phrase, it's not my journey, it's his journey. He needs to make the decisions for himself. And I am a parent first and a Florida Gator second. And so my parenting priorities come first. We will support him in whatever he does. I think that was I thought it was just crystallized so perfectly yesterday in a great statement from a very famous athlete.
Yeah.
If more parents acted that way and felt that way and thought that way, I don't know. I think our kids would be healthier, frankly. I think we'd have healthier, happier children.
And last I checked, Florida Gator fans, please don't get mad at me because, I mean, you know, every degree has merit to it. But last I checked, having a Stanford plaque.
Florida's pretty good at school, though.
And Florida plaque. I'm thinking that Stanford plaque stands a little bit higher.
They're a little different.
It stands a little bit higher than a Michigan State plaque.
A little bit?
Exactly.
Well, there's only four schools in the SEC that are AAU accredited, which is research grants, academic stuff, and it's Vanderbilt, Florida, A&M, and Missouri. So Florida
is not a decent school. It's not an academic. They don't pride themselves on the academic, but
how many schools are Stanford, though?
Yeah, but like, exactly. How many schools are Stanford? How many schools are Vanderbilt?
Yeah, this isn't about Florida. You know,
it's just about Stanford, and having that Stanford degree and whatnot gives you a little bit more wiggle room.
I find it fascinating. I don't think there's anything to be taken from it at all.
No.
But I find it fascinating that both Barry Sanders and Emmitt Smith's children didn't go to Oklahoma State or Florida, that they both went to Stanford. I don't know what it doesn't mean anything. I just find it interesting that the two greatest running backs ever at that time, right? Like, previously it was probably Jim Brown and Walter Payton, and we've had great guys since then. But, like, for my era growing up, it was Emmitt Smith and Barry Sanders. You had to pick a team.
Exactly.
It's like LeBron and Jordan. You had to pick a team. You're either on Team Emmitt or Team Barry. And the idea that both of those kids
went to Stanford
over Oklahoma State and Florida, like, good for them.
Yeah, kudos to them.
It means nothing, but it's interesting to me. I don't know why.
But every parent, go back and listen to Emmitt Smith and what he said 100%. Again, because it not only applies to sports, but it applies to academics as well, and whatever else you do with your kids.
Any activities.
Exactly.
Just let them be themselves. Let them, you know, guide them on their journey, but it ain't your journey.
Mm-hmm.
Great job, Emmitt Smith. Very proud of you, man. Cool job. Excellent stuff. D-Mace Dissection when we return. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game.